Log Talk Radio.
Welcome to the man's voice here on Cinco de Mayo Day. For all you people out here who are celebrating Cinco de Mayo, I hope you're having fun. I hope your weather is good and everything is everything. But I want to say hello to my panel. If any of you guys celebrating Cinco de Mayo today, most people don't even know it's Cinco de Mayo.
They don't even know what it is.
I know.
It's beating the French. It's about the war over with the French.
I'm celebrating Cinco de Mayo.
You are.
Yes, I went to Publix and they had all the Cinco de Mayo refried beans and lime and guacamole and all that out.
It's always about the food, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
All right, gentlemen, let's get started. I had a comment from one of our listeners. First of all, everybody was very happy with last week's show, it seemed. They liked the relaxed atmosphere that we had last week, so I'm hoping we can continue that. And those that are listening, we would like for you to join in with us on that atmosphere today. Why don't you call us at 646-668-8740. And when the person comes on and asks you if you would like to say anything, don't just hang up or not say anything. Say yeah, and then join the conversation. But I did have a listener who sent me a note and wanting us to talk about this. What he said was, Trump claims a wall is supposed to keep drugs out of the United States when some of the deadliest drugs come from the pharmaceutical companies within our own borders. I agree with this person. We're keeping the drugs out where you can't get tax dollars, but the ones that we're getting tax dollars from, we're letting them run rapid. As a matter of fact, the family that is supposed to be putting out the major part of opioids was in court or something just recently. I'm surprised that they're even, you know, I guess the world was coming because so many people were hooked on opioids, so the United States had to do something. But there's so many other drugs out there that keep Americans looking unhealthy. So the person who wrote this said, you know, why are we going after the people who are, you know, that Trump is going after them and not going after all the others. So what's some of the thoughts on that? Like Ron?
Well, first of all, every time that I hear that comment, it bothers me for a number of reasons. One is that, yes, there is a drug problem, and a lot of it is coming from south of the border. You know, nobody's denying any of that. But why don't we deal with the problem, nip it at the bud? If we didn't have so many people in this country that were addicted to drugs, then the drugs wouldn't be coming in. So I think there needs to be a strategy, a platform to addressing drug addiction here before, and maybe simultaneously. But as long as you have consumer demand and people wanting the drugs, there's going to be a way to get the drugs in. That's never going to stop. And as far as, you know, the why go after these people instead of the drug makers from China or whatever other countries, even Canada? You know, there's a lot of drugs that come in from Canada. I think the answer is simple. You know, these are the people that are not doing it, quote unquote, the legitimate way, and I think that's part of the reason that that maybe there's so much more scrutiny on that. You know, the drugs that come from Canada, some of them are FDA approved, maybe some aren't. From China, who the hell knows what's coming from there? But yet, you know, I think politics plays a role too, because You know, the president wants to keep our relationship with China and all these other countries, you know, going and moving forward. So I think politics, I think socioeconomic status, I think nipping the problem at the bud, I think all of that needs to go on at the same time.
But, you know, you hear a lot of times people will say, well, if you want to get a cheap prescription, go down to cross the border into Mexico. But you just brought up something most people don't know, that go across the border to Canada, it's the same thing. There are a lot of drugs in Canada that we can't get for cheap here in the United States. And the big issue is drugs for cheap. Everybody else is getting them a tenth or half of the price that we're paying for them. But, Bruce, you have thoughts?
Well, a lot of what Ron said is true. He started to lay out the complexity of the problem, and to add to that, to build on that, we seem to find different things to get addicted to every time something is controlled. Doesn't mean you shouldn't eradicate or try to control it, but we have a society, it seems, more than ever, it's talked about more than ever, I think it is more than it used to be, that just is having a real struggle dealing with a lot of life issues, and they see drugs as not only a recreational thing to do, but an escape. And a part of helping to diminish the supply, the need, the desire, you'll never eliminate it, is to let people be more, more occupied, more fulfilled in other ways, other than drugs. And I think we do need deterrence. I think a wall on an aggressive border, it may not just be Mexico, but we're talking about that the most, along with other things, not just a physical wall, helps control it. It's not an answer, but we've got to do something to control and then find, as Ron said, nip it in the bud at the source. Otherwise, we're never going to – it's just going to just keep moving from one drug to another to another to another. So there's no quick fix. There's no button you can push. It's a active program that has to be pursued.
But, you know, it seems that if a manufacturer today makes drugs, they are immediately wealthy in the United States. But other foreign countries make cross-the-counter drugs, and they don't spend the money we spend for them. So I know that at one time the president was going to look at price restrictions on drugs, but that seems to have died off the side of the road. I think the lobbyists that we have for drugs in this country supersede, you know, anything else. I mean, our politicians are living a lot off of the drug money, but no one talks about that. I mean, we're all talking about drugs coming in from the south border, but I would think, if, you know, to me, if you cut off the left hand, you're going to learn how to write with the right hand. But so if you cut off Mexico, that doesn't stop going up to Canada and coming down. So I don't know why we are looking. Say
David,
again?
Can I add something to that? I've had personal experience in working with the drug companies over the years in my past in engineering. And a major part of the major drug companies, I believe still today, manufacture their a significant amount of their drug quantities in Puerto Rico. Barceloneta, the town of Barceloneta, Puerto Rico, is a huge row of manufacturing. You would not believe the product that is out there. So my point of that is, okay, if they're importing these things from there, then we ought to get the benefit, right? Because it seems like the only one that doesn't get the benefit is if they're manufactured here. So if most of these drugs are coming in from from a Puerto Rican source or something like that, then we should get the break. I'm being a little facetious, but if we don't demand the reduction or demand fairness in pricing, we're not going to get it.
Right. Jeremiah, where are you on this conversation? And for everybody who has been asking where Jeremiah, Jeremiah, why don't you answer this question?
That's a pretty warm introduction there, huh? you guys have made many statements that are fact and true. Just the U.S. system when it comes to the FDA and approved drugs. But I think it's, you know, everything is about all economics. It boils down to money. It boils down to financial wealth. So a lot of things that the pharmaceutical companies do is it's revolving around economics versus, like you said, Mexico. You know, you can get the same drug for a little of nothing, same drug. So, yeah.
All right. You know, we, and we're going to talk a little bit about Michigan. Michigan seems to be the state of choice for people having issues these days because, well, Flint Water, I think, brought Michigan to light, but they're not the only ones anymore. There's a big demonstration going on right now in Denmark, South Carolina, because they're claiming that the water system that the state is using is poisoning them. So they are now fighting with the state. The citizens all are saying that they're catching cancer and all those kinds of things because the state is poisoning their water. West Virginia is fighting because their water system now is going to go private, but they're using public dollars to privatize their water system. So everybody is fussing over water. And I do know that Flint is still not totally back to 100% clean water. So I guess my question is, we have kids and elderly and things like that who all live off water. But water seems to be a big issue in the United States. And, you know, the way it's going is the United States is beginning to sound like a third world country where we're out trying to get water to third world countries. There are groups like the Rotary and those organizations who are going out to see that there's water in, you know, different countries. But in the United States now, it seems like we're the ones that are having bad water. I don't know where this came from. It just like came out of nowhere. But Ron, where do you think all this is going to go? Why are we having this issue? Is it climate change? Is it what is it?
I think the answer, at least to me, is pretty straightforward. It's an aging infrastructure, and it's not just in Michigan. It's not just in Flint. I think it's all over the country. The investment in infrastructure, which includes, you know, the pipes where we get our water from. Let's face it, there hasn't been investment in upgrading these systems, just like the roads, the bridges, the airports. A lot of things in this country are corroding, and I think that's just unacceptable, you know, being the richest country on the planet, so to speak, in parentheses, quotations. You know, we have to do better. We have to, our federal government and going all the way down to our local communities, we have to do better at investing in our infrastructure. Don't know where the money's going to come from, but they find it for other stupid things. So I think it's about time that and that's one thing that I agree with President Trump on. You know, our infrastructure compared to other countries is pathetic. And it's a shame. It's an embarrassment, and we need to do something about it. So I think it's just an aging system, you know, lead in the pipes and all that. And I'm not an expert, but, you know, I'm sure Bruce can add to that. But it's just an aging infrastructure. You know, my house, the plumbing in my house, it probably hasn't been changed since the house was built, and that was in 1950. So, you know, I'm part of the problem too. I think everybody shares a little of the blame.
Well, you know, I work in a 100-year-old building, and when I first got there the first day, I was going to make coffee, and someone said, if you're going to go make coffee, don't use the water. You got to go buy bottled water. And I went and poured some water, and it was yellow. I mean, really yellow. I like, wow. So, Bruce, you're in Flint. What just started the whole thing? I think everyone's catching on now that their water may not be, you know, if you go to Home Depot, you can get one of those little test kits, and they're kind of free where you test water. I think must be everybody's using them, because now everybody's complaining about their water. You're an engineer, Bruce. Why do you think water has become so contaminated in the United States?
It hasn't become so contaminated. It has become more contaminated, as Ron said. One of the biggest things is we have a infrastructure like anything else, roads, water, sewer, anything, that ages. It doesn't stay the same. And we have been a country that constantly in our politics shirk the responsibility of saying, we're not going to make it look good and put a Band-Aid on it anymore. We're going to make it right. Europe does that with their roads. Other countries do that. They make the commitment to do it right. And then, of course, the next breath is, well, we need more money to do that. Well, the reason people resist, including myself, is you have to prove to me that you're going to take money and spend it where you said you were going to spend it. People are so distrusting on how many times, I can tell you, how many times in Michigan we said, well, we're going to rebuild the infrastructure. And we're going to start with the roads because those are felt the most. We've paid for probably rebuilding our roads multiple times, and the roads are still terrible. So people have this animosity, this suspicion, validated by action, that they're not going to – because I've seen in my career in water and sewer, which is my forte, people will respond and pay – the hard dollars. They will pay the big bill if they know it's going to be spent where it needs to be spent to fix the problem. They don't believe it's going to be done. So for the life of me, because we did this before, why can't a community say, we'll generate the money, we'll pay the bill, we'll do this, we'll do that, and we need a guarantee in writing or however it makes them comfortable that those funds will be used for that reason. Shouldn't have to do that. But, that's where we are. The legislators need to be the leaders in making sure that happens. If they do that, people will respond. And I guarantee you they'll respond.
Wouldn't you say that would be part of our tax dollars?
Well, yeah, but when we used to have to build, say, go from lagoon system in a village to a plant, a physical mechanical plant, your tax dollars aren't going to cover that. You have to have an assessment or something to up the funds, and that's understandable. People don't like it. We've had communities, their sewer or water rates might go up 3, 4, 5, 6 times, and people get very emotional and upset. But eventually they understand it's this or you end up with bad water or a water that continues to get worse. And people will make that decision to do it if they know that's what's going to be done. There's too many instances where that's not happening all over the country. You mentioned Flint. There are a lot of communities now that want to be Flint wannabes. Well, there are Flint problem communities all over the country, and it's not because they did anything wrong. Is sewer water systems used to have leaded leads from main line to home. That was the standard before we knew it was a bad thing to do, And that's the age. Ron probably doesn't have lead, but he probably has copper and cast iron in his home. That's not so bad. But the lead situation now we know is wrong. Those have to be replaced. And if you disturb it, and as did in Flint, and took off somewhat of a protective coating, that exposed the lead again, and the lead started leaching, or lead components started leaching into the water. So the fact that people say, well, they're not done yet, Flint's got, you know, probably thousands and thousands and thousands of leads they had to replace. That takes time, but you have to have a program that shows an aggressive way to get that done.
Hey, Bruce,
yes.
I have a question, and maybe you know the answer because you follow politics a lot closer than I do. I know that was one of the big items on President Trump's platform is to upgrade our infrastructure. But after he got elected, I haven't really heard much about infrastructure. Have you? I mean, am I missing something here, or is it just that the media is not covering it?
Well, Ron, you're not missing. You're partially right. You haven't heard much about it. But just today, and I shook my head. I hope I heard it correctly, that Chuck Schumer and Pelosi and the president and some leading Republicans sat down for a two-hour meeting and started to hammer out some kind of a $2 trillion program that they actually decided to began to agree on for infrastructure. That just happened today. Let's only hope. It seems like the only way they will really react is if you and I and the fence post and everybody else starts yelling and screaming about the fact that you need to fix it. Without our pressure, it just doesn't seem to get done. And we should force them to a guarantee that if you come after me for some more money. I want a written guarantee that money will be spent where you said it was going to be spent. And then I want proof followed up that it was spent there. People will do that if they believe you. They won't if they don't.
All right. So to get to kind of where we were last week, I want to ask you guys, what are you thinking? I mean, we could stay in, and I will probably come back to Michigan, but I hate to be ragging on Michigan for all the people that are listening in Michigan, wondering what else I got to say about your, but there's a lot going on in Michigan right now. But anyway, Bruce, you're very good at it. Sometimes you always take us to a place where we have a lot to think about. So why don't you start a conversation for us?
All right. Well, one of the things you and I have touched on before, David, and I know it's other parts in the country, is we throw also, let's call it the infrastructure of education. We have a lot of money, and we have a lot of great teachers that don't get the chance to teach the way they want to teach. They're either in a straitjacket or whatever. My point being, we are constantly looked at as a joke. Overall, when we match up to some of the other leading countries in the world. So if a community, there's rumor that some of the communities here in Michigan, their school systems might be taken over by the federal government. And we all know, oh boy, that's going to be good. Here's what I would do if I was on a committee, or let's say on a school board that was failing. And I could mention names, but let's not. I would simply say, all right, the federal government, you're going to come in and run it. I want a seat at the table. Here's we're going to work on this together. Let's, instead of arguing with each other and blaming each other, let's figure out a way to improve our school system. It seems to be on the bottom, and the only way to go is up, and make it more of an example for others to look at. Let's make it a joint effort of the existing school system management and them and the federal government. You don't hear that conversation at all. I don't.
Yeah, Bruce.
Yes.
I mean, I can talk about our school system here locally. It's not the best, you know. Everybody knows that Florida, in terms of public education, is not very high on the totem pole I mean, our Miami-Dade County Public Schools supposedly is an A district. I don't, you know, who knows what that means? Who knows what criteria they use or you know, what they're accounting in that to make it an A district. But there's a lot of challenges, and I can tell you because both my brother and his fiance are both teachers, and the immigrant and not I'm not saying anything bad against immigrants. You know, I come from an immigrant family, but the immigrant situation is placing a huge burden here in Miami, as I'm sure it is in Houston, Dallas, L.A., New York. You know, all the bigger metropolitan areas, and what's happening here, at least, is that the students that do speak English and they're trying to learn, they're mixed in. They're mixed in with these students that they don't even speak Spanish. I, you know, my understanding, I was told that they speak some language. I don't even know if it's a language. They're from Central America. They're Indian. You know, when I say Indian, I mean native. So they don't even understand Spanish, and the teachers are dealing with these students while they're trying to deal with the quote unquote, you know, regular students, and that's a big problem. And I think our teachers don't get paid enough. Everybody knows that. At least here in Florida, they don't get paid enough. And you're right, Bruce. I mean, I've used statistics before when writing grants for educational programs, and especially when it comes to science, technology, education, and math, we're like near the bottom of the developed countries, and I think that's through high school though. I mean, once you're talking about university, college, et cetera, you know, then I think we do have some of the best institutions in the world. However, you know, you look at the student population of these universities, and a lot of them, if not most of them, in some places are from other countries in the world. So I don't know that there's an easy fix. There never is to the problems of this kind of magnitude. You know, I think every district, every school district is different. But I think, like everything, money helps to solve problems, and I think there isn't enough of it being spent to address. The bottom line, at least here, is there isn't enough money to hire special teachers to deal with these students and separate them out, so everybody's suffering.
Ron, you're right. And the only way we seem to respond in a real, genuine way to fix a problem is if our back is to the wall. We have to get to the point where there's no way out of this box unless I fight for what's right. We do it in war. We do it in emergencies. We do it in floods. We do it in a lot of the tragic things that have been happening in this country. But as far as education, infrastructure, things like that, that should also be an emergency. We just, I don't want to use the word lazy, but because I'm just as guilty as anyone else. We have to find a way to ultimately make it important enough that we do that. Your example of people that don't speak and then they're just put in a school environment. That's not fair to the students there or to the teachers. We have
right.
to then say, government, assimilate them before they come into our school system. And there's nothing wrong with us saying, you have to assimilate to some degree. We don't have to assimilate to you. You want to come live in our country, a fantastic country, and we welcome you. But you have to do certain things to start to fit in, because we can't have a education system for every type of person in every language in the world. That'd be ridiculous.
Right.
We can't do it.
Right. And yeah, the big thing is assimilation. You know, I guess that's the buzzword. And so they try to be inclusive, and I think now they're even assimilating handicapped students again. So I don't know. I don't know if there's an answer.
But that, Ron, that's where if you and I could call the shots, we could go to the federal government and say, here's where you start with this. people that are coming into our country, that are welcomed into our country, that we want to blossom in our country, you, federal government, have to come up with the programs to help them assimilate better into the system that's already here. And if they really don't want to do that, that's okay. But then don't come. Don't come. That's okay. We're not forcing you. You want to come here. And we seem to have lost that.
Jeremiah, where are you in this conversation?
I'm listening to these guys.
How do you feel?
I don't have too much to say about it. I really don't.
Jeremiah, do you think we should have open borders?
And what do you mean by open borders?
Do you think we should have open borders, and do you think our school system should take in children of people who come to the border who are not citizens yet?
It's called public schools, and to me the term public in Florida, in Miami-Dade, Broward County, means everyone. But that's a little bit that's difficult to ask of. Because if I were to do numbers to see how many people wanted to come to the United States or come to Miami from different states, different countries, the Caribbean, those are large numbers. And the school system budget is operating at a very low budget at this time. In addition to the school shootings, I think the budget has diminished even more because they're treating mental illness and PTSD symptoms from incidents that occurred at schools. Here in Broward County, they're suing the school district because of the shooting in the Broward County schools. And the parents and students are still complaining that they aren't getting enough help after the incident, stuff like that. So with the increased manpower that the school system has gone through, which means they have incorporated where a police officer has to be at every school, whether it's elementary, middle, or high school, now you're talking about, you know, kids coming over from different countries or the Caribbean. I mean, you know, how much can the United States, not even the United States, you know, the state, which is state of Florida, has a very low budget for schooling, how much can they really afford to employ all these programs? I can't think of the name of those programs on top of my head. I know they have like ESOL and this and that because, you know, you have kids that don't speak English. You have kids that speak other languages that you and I don't speak and need to learn English or need to be able to communicate and learn something in school. So, I mean, I just think that, well, we need to put something in place that if you are coming over, you know, you have to pay for your kid's school because, you know what, they haven't paid for one tax or did nothing for the United States coming over. So, you know, automatically you're just granted schooling and I don't know. I mean, our budget is very scarce when it comes to the schooling system here.
Okay, I'll go for that, but I just want to know what happened to all that lottery money that's supposed to be going into the schools because I don't see it going in there.
It probably is going.
It's another bait and switch.
We got a thief politician.
It's another bait and switch, at least in Michigan. When the lottery came here, in order to pass it, I remember when it started, you guys weren't born yet, probably. And you, David, you were. I'm talking about Jeremiah and Ron. They promised up and down all the money from the lottery, at least in Michigan, was going to go towards schools. And they let us believe by actions and deeds that, oh, man, we're going to get more for the teachers and more supplies and this and that. And it was almost like, yeah, just let them. The moment it passed, they took out all the general fund money that used to be in the schools and replaced it with the lottery money. And it was a bait and switch. And as long as my generation is alive, and you mentioned lottery in this state, people see red. It's another situation where, and then they'll stand up there and say, well, we did put all the lottery money into the schools. Yeah, but you didn't tell us you're going to take all the others away. So it's that distrust factor again.
Okay. All right. So, Ron, what do you want to talk about?
Sorry, I'm choking here. I just saw in the news there was yet another plane accident. Actually, two in the last 2 days. Sorry. One here in Florida, in Jacksonville. I don't know if you're aware of that.
Yeah.
But it was a Miami Air charter plane that skidded and landed in a river. And then I was just watching in Russia, there was a plane accident. What the hell is going on with all these planes now?
The one in Russia killed like 41 people already.
Yeah, it blew up. All right, set fire.
I mean, is it an economical thing? I mean, are they not checking the planes like they used to? I'm starting to get a little scared to fly.
Well,
even U.S. planes. I mean that. I trusted American planes more than any other country, I guess, and I trusted Boeing. And then look what happened with Boeing. And then I found out that a lot of our planes are serviced in Mexico. I don't know if you're aware of that, but a lot of our planes actually go to Mexico to be serviced there because it's cheaper.
And let's not always assume that it's just the mechanical item called the airplane. It can be pilot error too, which is what they've kind of insinuated might or might not be the problem with that the MAX, the Boeing MAX.
Right,
those two accidents. So
I do have another topic that will bring us back to, if I may.
Yes,
have two topics, David?
Yes, you can.
Which will bring us back to President Trump. North Korea, if you've heard, they're launching missiles again. And, little rocket man. I mean, I kind of like them in a way, but I dislike them in many ways. I don't know whatever came of the meetings that Trump and Kim Jong-un had, but apparently it didn't work, or I don't know what's going on. Does anybody know what's going on? I mean, is he like trying to intimidate the U.S. again, or I mean, he's back at it again, apparently.
Well, yeah, everyone is concerned who keeps an eye on North Korea that he is now inching toward making the United States mad, but he's really trying to piss off Trump because he feels Trump is not a good leader. So he wants to prove it by bombing or something or doing something crazy.
Yeah, but that's not the sign of a stable person. And I guess we all knew he wasn't very stable or stable in his own ways.
But wouldn't you think that? Would you think that the North Koreans would say the same thing about us and President Trump?
Oh, yeah, because they've been brainwashed. But, I guess they could say we've been brainwashed. But, we have a life. I mean, we have things that we enjoy every day, and commodities, and we have food. And, the North Koreans are starving, and they have blackouts, because they don't have electricity to power their buildings and their houses. And you look at a map of the world, and North Korea is almost entirely in black, when South Korea is, you see lights everywhere. So what does that tell you? That the few are getting the money, and the masses, the ones that are following their leader, are the ones that are suffering the consequences, so to speak.
Well, I have a question. Are you been keeping up with this beluga whale that showed up in Norway with gear on? And he's a spy. You got a whale spy that's roaming around, and they claim it came from Russia. That Russia is now using animals to do a lot of their work. Seems Russia keeps trying to do all kinds of things, but it seems spying is one of the things they're learning to do the best. Because I don't even know why they would be spying in Norway, and spying on Norway, or did the whale get lost along the way?
Not a bad idea, though.
Well, I can add something to that.
Please.
Let's not automatically assume. We know what assume says about you and me, David, or anybody else that we assume with. That he was some kind of secret weapon. It could have been something as simple as he broke loose. Yeah, they used him for something. We do, too. We use dolphins. We use other animals for different things. But we don't know what he was being used for. All he knows is I'm free, and I want some attention. He came up to the boat like a little puppy dog. And so I don't know if he is. And if he is, I would like to think the people that now know where he is, or they were able to take those belts off of him, even though we see pictures. I've been told those are off. That they'll find out what's going on, but I wouldn't automatically assume he's some deep dark secret weapon. And being all white albino eyes, he sure is easy to pick out.
True.
That's true.
You know, it could be that he's been trained to help divers or go down and look for ships, something like that.
That's what they said. They'll use them sometimes to bring tools down to workers that are on deep dives. But I don't know if that's true either. But, I mean, we automatically want to go to – we should be cautious. We should be suspicious. But we automatically want to go to, oh, this is some secret weapon. Really? Make sure first.
Well, all right, Jeremiah, what are you thinking about these days?
Well, little playoffs. Kind of interesting what's going on with the playoffs. And, you know, I'm into sports quite a bit.
So tell us about it. What about the playoffs?
Well, you got, you know, Houston. You know, they won last night, and they were doing pretty good again in their series. And then you got I'm surprised by the Milwaukee Bucks. I mean, I haven't been following basketball throughout the season, but they're in the next round of the playoffs. They're playing pretty good. And then they had a triple overtime. Can't remember what teams were they. What teams were they that had that triple overtime? If anybody can recall.
Oh yeah, that who was that?
Let me see. Okay. Let's see right now.
Wasn't that a couple days ago?
Yes, it was. I'm thinking it was. Yeah, it was the. I think it was. Was it the Nuggets? Hold on one second. Not too sure, but it was a triple overtime game.
Yeah, yeah.
It was insane.
They were both getting exhausted.
Yeah. And it was the longest game in history.
Was it?
In so many years. Yeah, in so many years. Probably about 30 years, man. It was the longest game, longest playoff game in NBA history.
Jeremiah, was it a clean win after three overtimes, or was it a fluke win?
It was a clean win.
Was it? Good.
Yeah,
David,
and
how do you feel about the playoffs?
Pardon me?
How do you feel about the playoffs?
I feel that everybody who's watching it has an opinion about it. I don't.
You don't care for sports.
I'll take this Scientology cruise ship somewhere and figure out and hang, you know, and relax about it and see what goes on.
I got two things.
All right.
One is the across TV right now. Trump and top congressional Democrats meet to discuss potential infrastructure plan. Well, let's hope that's somewhat true. And what I wanted to bring up was this has frosted me for a while, because think it's insulting to everybody they lay this template on. Why, and I'd like Ron and Jeremiah's opinion on this, and you too, David. Why do so many groups, why are so many groups expected to vote for anyone who represents that group instead of voting their own conscience or their own brain, their own mind? In other words, if we have an African-American running, well, then all the African-Americans should vote for him. If we have an old white guy, well, then he's going to get all the senior white voters. If we have a woman, all the women should vote for her. Why? That's insulting to every one of those groups, because you're basically saying you don't get to think about it. You just better vote for them because they represent you. Well, I thought you're all supposed to be represented by the government we put in place. I know that's a naive thought, but you know where I'm going. And it just upsets me that we constantly go there. That doesn't bring us together. That divides us. So what do you guys think?
I think it's just human nature a little bit, Bruce. You know, I'm guilty of it too. I've done it myself. Sorry?
No, go ahead.
Okay,
go ahead.
I thought you said something. You know, I've done it too. I think the reason I've done it, I guess, is because it makes me feel – and, you know, for whatever this is worth, it makes me feel that this person is closer to me than anybody else, or closer to being like me than anybody else, and therefore probably thinks more like me in the things that are important to me. And so I would want this person, you know, to be the one that deals with the laws and legislation and things that are going to be affecting my everyday life. So,
Ron, I get that, but let's say that your choice that you're thinking about, and I know you would think about him, you wouldn't just blindly vote, is dumb as a rock. And I'm not insulting any group. I'm just saying, for instance, whoever you're thinking about voting that represents whoever you want him to represent is dumb as a rock. You wouldn't vote for him.
No, of course not. But I think the media plays a big role too in influencing who people vote for.
Oh, sure.
And they focus, you know, they focus on certain individuals, and then they focus less on other candidates. And you know, that's the power of persuasion, whether you want to think of it that way or not. You know, they're subliminally sending a message that, oh wow, so you know. For example, if somebody is like enamored with Hollywood, and they say, oh, you know, all Hollywood actors are behind this candidate, you know, that's the power of persuasion. And subliminally, they're sending a message to you saying, oh, I should vote for this person because all these other people are. And you know, so there's a lot of dynamics, I think. But you know, like for example, African Americans voting for an African American, I can understand why. You know, women voting for Hillary, I can understand why. Not that it makes all the sense in the world, because again, if it's a candidate who's a complete idiot and you still vote for him, then that doesn't speak highly of your own intelligence.
But for me, I would think I would be insulting my African American friends or my Mexican friends, whoever you want to pick, to say, well, you voted for him and that's the only reason. I agree with you. That's an aspect of it. But I would also say, I would almost say, is there that one reason? And if he or she says yes, okay, what are the other reasons why you're voting for this person? I would always follow up with, what else makes you think you want to vote for this person? Because if I don't, then they're going to automatically think, well, he doesn't think I have a brain, and he might think I didn't use my brain at all. I just voted for him because he looks like or is like me. And you just laid out an example that, and I agree with you, that the value of that has a positive aspect, but it's not the only reason you vote for him. And the press constantly says, well, if you don't vote for this person because this person looks just like you, you're sacrilege. You're a terrible person. And there's the press again trying to push that agenda instead of just giving us the facts of what that person represents.
All right, gentlemen.
Jeremiah, what do you think?
I really can't say, man. I think people are entitled to do what they want. I mean, if you want to vote for someone because of particular reasons, may you do so.
Well, I agree, but do you think a lot of people? I could understand when President Obama was elected, a lot of minorities and African Americans voting for him because that was a very special event, a very special opportunity. I get that. It was an overpowering thing in that regard. But a lot of my African American friends I've talked to, I said, is that the only reason you voted for him? They said, no way. That's not the only reason. That's all I'm saying is I agree with you. They have a right to vote for whoever they want to vote for. But do they get to engage their thought process? I guess you could say if they don't want to use that, they don't have to either. It just kind of gets me that there's this automatic assumption that you have to vote for someone because they look like you or you know what I'm trying to say.
Correct. Right. I don't know. That's probably a little bit of if that's coming out of someone's mouth, it's probably just being blunt. Probably don't have a real explanation for their actions. So, as we know, people who can't articulate why they did something, they just say the most simplest, justifiable, in their mind, thing to say.
Yeah, you're right about that.
All right, I have a question. Jeremiah, what's your hobby?
My hobby is building my business. That's my hobby right now. Right now. I don't have any hobbies right now.
And you're under 30, right?
I'm 30.
You're under 30. So, and you're trying to become a millionaire. And tell us what kind of businesses you're going. Because I think a lot of young men your age would say, yeah, I want to be a millionaire, but I don't know how. I don't know what to do. And I guess it's
also,
kind of within your DNA to kind of figure that out. But what are you doing, Jeremiah? And what would you say to other young men your age who also want to be millionaires?
And we'll start with the hardest thing, the growing pains. People like to say the blood, sweat, and tears, you know, the hard times. You doing what your business do. Because a lot of people, they want to be a boss, but they can't get down and scrub those floors like you would want your employees to do so. So I'm a big fan of that. I work hard. I do what my cleaners do. I do what the hood cleaning guys do.
I think it would help though. You would tell people, because you say you do what your cleaners do. Tell us what kind of companies you're creating.
Okay. So I have, my company is called Green Pro Clean. We specialize in commercial cleaning. Our focal point is restaurants, which needs a multitude of cleaning, construction, which we can know that can be a very dusty, dirty environment, whether you're rebuilding or it's new construction. And then also we have property management companies we work along with, which I call property preservation. Preserve your property, such as, you know, general cleaning, pressure cleaning, window cleaning, carpet cleaning. Cleanliness helps when it comes to rodents, deterioration of the property, things of that nature. And restaurants, you're a place of business. People come and eat every day. So you want your restaurant to be as clean and spectacular as it could be. And also, you're governed by the local fire marshal or city in regards to cleaning your hood and exhaust system, which is pretty much the oven. You have a fryer oven you cook over, and it kind of exhausts the heat, the grease, everything out of your restaurant kind of thing. And
hey,
then,
Jeremiah.
Yes.
I have a question for you. Have you ever seen, like, you know, the Gordon Ramsay show? I forget what it's called, but have you ever seen, when you go into a restaurant, have you, what's the worst thing you've ever seen inside a fryer, let's say?
I have pretty good restaurants. Also, we have an oil filtration system that helps you keep your fryer oil clean. And what most people don't know is the oil that's in the fryer is recycled about 3 times before it's thrown out. And
so
and
all
if
restaurants
you knew this,
do that?
Pretty much, yes.
Yeah.
Especially restaurants like let me give you an example. Okay, so you have your let's say a typical Cuban restaurant, right? So you have to fry your plantains, you have to fry your fries, you have to fry your chicken nuggets or whatever, and your fish. So your fish oil, you can't reuse that oil because it's fish, right? So what they tend to do is you take your easy oil, divide it into three. So your easy oil is your fries oil. You have to use the best oil on fries because, you know, you can taste it. It changes the fries right away. Then you got your second tier, which you can cook you don't dump it out. You just put it into the next fryer. When you can fry your plantains, your chicken, whatever. It's a little bit, it's darker, but it's still usable. And then you have your oil, which you can fry your fish in, because, you know, you can't fry. You can't use the same oil you use for plantains as you use for fish, because it's going to smell like fish, you know?
We'll do that when we get to the cooking show. But
gotcha.
Can I ask Jeremiah a question before we're done here?
Sure, go ahead.
Jeremiah, what would you say is the hardest skill set or the hardest characteristic to find in employees that you hire and hopefully keep?
I would say two things. Two things came to mind instantly is to be punctual and do the same job every day. So, you know, you have an employee that they give 50% today, 80% tomorrow, 100% on payday, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And also care about what you're doing to do it to the best of your ability.
Right.
Okay, so I tell people, this is what you chose to do. You've been a cleaner for 5 years now. Whether you're working as a cleaner to get your way through college, that's been your professional all your life, whatever it is, I like to keep my customers happy.
Yeah.
So I want that floor clean to the best of your ability every day. And when I ask this from you, you can see, like, that's why I love to work, because I can go do it myself. If you see your owner doing what you should be doing, you should be more than welcome to do it yourself.
Well, and you gain instant respect with your employees, don't you?
Correct.
Yeah.
Well,
right.
I wanted to get to the question of young guy who wants to go into business and be a millionaire. Like, wow, we only got like 90 seconds left. Give me one thought, Jeremiah, that you would tell a young man who said, I don't know what to do, but I want to be a millionaire and I want to be in business. What would you, I guess that's a hard question, but a quick thought on something you think that somebody should think about. Hello?
I would say you want to be successful. You want to be an entrepreneur. I don't want you to solely think about being a millionaire. I know you want to be successful. But jump. Take that jump and have a backbone. Know what you're getting yourself into. Know what you're doing. Take that leap and jump and move forward to, you know, whatever you're trying to do. I mean, if you never jump and try, you'll never know what success you could have if you never try. But we could continue this on the next show as well.
And have good people skills.
Yeah, you have to. It depends on your business. I mean, and that's why I say know what you're doing, because don't select a business where you have to deal with people and you don't know how to deal with people.
Right.
You know what I mean? You know, let's just say a gentleman just got out of prison after doing 5 or 10 years. You want to start a business? Please don't start a business with dealing with people. You know, that might not be your greatest asset at this time because you've been away from technology, people for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
All right, we got to bring that to an end. I'm sorry, but we'll be back again next week, guys. So look for us again next week at 6 o'clock here on the same way you got us this week. You guys have a great week.
Yes, everybody have a good week.
It's all about the youth.